today. Okay, so we are holding, yeah, the new recording system that I'm going to try. Ladies, are you able to hear us?
No. Same company?
No, different company. Looks like I lost you there. Do we have you now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we're holding in the middle of the Mishnah on Chavtes Amud Beis. Chavtes Amud Beis. Yeah, in the middle of the Mishnah. About 8-9 lines from the top. A line by the first two dots in the Mishnah. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about. So the Mishnah started talking about. We started talking about a number of things that of goyim that are offered b'hana. The first thing we had was wine, Yayin Nesach, and we started talking about the distinction between Yayin Nesach, which was actually used for libations to an Avodah Zarah, versus Stam Yainam, which is wine of Goyim, that there's a concern that they may have used it for Nisuch, or you also have the idea we're going to talk about later on in the Perek, that the Chachamim made a Gzeira on it, even when there's no such concern, because of Bnei Sehen, because you don't want there to be an inappropriate closeness between Jews and Goyim, which could lead to intermarriage. Anyway, we talked about briefly the idea yesterday that Rishonim bring, that Rashi brings, and it's brought eventually in Shulchan Aruch, that we're in a time and place, like nowadays, when Goyim don't usually do libation, Avodah Zarah, maybe their wine is not also b'hana, maybe it's only also to drink. Anyway, so we mentioned wine, we mentioned vinegar made from wine, we mentioned Cheres Hadrayoni, which is an earthenware that had wine, that was impregnated with wine when they first made it. We'll talk about it later on in the Gemara and a couple of Dafim, how they did it. And Urdis Lavurim, and skins of animals that had a hole in them where they cut out the heart and offered it to Avodah Zarah. Then we talked about the last two things we talked about after that are you have meat that's being brought into a temple of Avodah Zarah. It's still mutter because it hasn't yet been offered before the Geshke. Once it's brought out, then it's offer. And the last thing we said was that when you have goyim who are on pilgrimage to a place of worship of theirs, you're not allowed to do business with them. When they're coming back, then it's mutter. So that's where we're holding the two dots in the Mishnah and Chavtes on the base. So, more things of goyim that are also b'hana. Noidus ha'ovdei kechavim, if you have wine skins, in those times a common way to carry around wine was you'd have a bag made out of skin that you'd put wine in. So you have these wine skins that belong to goyim. The kind of skin bags, yeah. Which they... What? No, well, the point is that there was just a common kind of thing. The kan kanehem, or the earthenware jugs. And the yayin shayisrael comes to hand, and the problem is that you have Jewish wine that was put in them to keep for long-term storage. Also, asur and visur and isur hana, they're also offer to drink, and not only to drink, but they're also offer b'hana, divir and meir, that's what a meir
so
says.
Is that implying the wine that was once
in other words, yeah, because they absorb wine, and therefore now when you have Jewish wine in there, so it absorbs that taste, and in particular also the Rishonim talk about there's the idea that you have the problem that roots to the kiyuman. We're going to talk about later on in the Sefer, in the Nuns, we're going to get more in greater detail into the dinim of Yayin Nesach, and we're going to talk over there about the idea that whenever you have roots to the kiyuman, whenever you have a situation where a Jew has reason to want that goyish of wine, that Yayin Nesach or Stam Yainim or whatever should continue to exist, then that creates a problem in halacha. So over here, you have these barrels or whatever that previously contained goyish of wine. You want that goyish of wine. You want those barrels to continue to exist because you're keeping your wine in there now. Therefore, we're saying that the Rav Sarah Meir is saying it makes them also b'hana.
Divir
of Meir. No, it means in other words, the wine itself. So actually, Tosfos talks about later on. Tosfos later on the days where the Gemara starts talking about this whole issue. Tosfos discusses over there different explanations of what's going on over here. That's the thing. Rashi just mentions that you put wine in there to keep permanently, and it seems from Rashi that it's just the bag itself or the barrel itself that's also b'hana, not necessarily the wine. Tosfos says in that case, why are we mentioning the wine?
Right.
But Tosfos discusses that maybe the wine itself becomes also b'hana according to the mayor. Also, the Chachamim, I remember any sort in Isra Hana, in any case, the Chachamim say that it's not also b'hana, it's only also to drink. Because even if it absorbs some of the wine from there, it's not enough to make it also.
Why isn't the Mishnah saying it's
not Shulban? There's a mayor that said it's also b'hana, the Chachamim say
that. Why isn't this one the only hold that's not Shulban? Why? It's absorbing
It's absorbing from Stam Yainam. Okay, but it's not enough to make it also Bahana say the Chacham. And we'll see. We'll get to it later on in the Gemara on Lama days. We'll deal with the details over Shabbos or after Shabbos or whatever. Okay. Onward. Hacharsanim Bahazagim Shal Ezek Chachavim, great pits or great skins of Goyim, which are left over from the wine pressing. Asurin, they're also author, because of the wine that's absorbed, because of the grape juice, whatever, that's absorbed in them. The Isurin Isur Hana, the Rav Meir, and again, Rav Meir says they are also author of Hana. The Chamim Aymim, the Chamim say it depends. Lachim, Asurin, if they are still moist, which is, Rashi says, during the 12 months after the wine pressing took place, then the seeds or the pit. Then they are the seeds. I mean, or the skins. Yeah, the seeds or the skin. Then indeed they are also b'hanor because they contain yain nesa. Yevashim mutarin, but once they dry out after 12 months, then they're mutar b'hanor.
And no
what? Yeah. Okay. Another thing. Hamurias. What about so now till now we've been talking about wine itself. Now we're going to talk about one thing actually, and then we're going to digress to other things. Murias is fish juice. The fish juice in and of itself.
We skip liquors.
Yeah. It's liquor is because it depends. If they're made with wine, then it's the same kind of thing. But wait, we're going to deal with in the Gemara with mixed wines and blended wines and all that sort of thing. Wait. Okay. Hamurias. Murias is fish juice. In those times, they used to use it. In those times, they used to use it as a condiment. They used to use it as a dipping sauce or whatever. Very often, though, they would mix wine into it. So therefore, again, you have a problem. So if it has goyish wine in it, then again, you have a problem with it. And now also we're going to talk about a different kind of thing, cheese made in a place called Beis Unyaki. Rashi says Beis Unyaki is the name of a village. Some people say that it's actually a name of a region in Turkey. In English, that area is called Bithynia nowadays, part of Turkey. Whatever it is, they made cheese over there. They made cheese over there. So that kind of cheese from there that's made by Goyim, Asurin Bi Asurin Isohana, this Murias of the Goyim that has wine mixed into it, or cheese from Beis Unyaki, is also Asabahana Zivir Ameir.
This is the source why we don't need
Goyim. No, wait. Hold on. Here we're talking about cheese from a specific place. Later on in the Mishnah, the next thing in the Mishnah, we're talking about Goyish cheese in general. And later on in the Gemara, on Daf Lamed Hey, we'll deal with the details. But right first, we're talking about a kind of cheese which Rav Meir is arguing is also Bahana. For reasons that we will discuss in the Gemara later on Daf Lamed Daled, why that cheese, more than any other Goyish cheese, should be also Bahana, according to Rav Meir. But Chachamim Aymim, any certain Isra Hana, the Chachamim say, no, it's not also Bahana. It's no different than any other cheese. It's also to eat, but it's Mutar Bahana, just like any other Goyish cheese, even if it comes from the Beis Unyaki place. Okay. Now, talking more generally about Goyish cheese, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shor Rabbi Shmuel as Rabbi Yeshua, Kori Mahalchan Bajerach. Rabbi Shmuel one time asked Rabbi Yeshua when they were traveling on the road. The question was, Amar Leim, if name Ma Osu Gvinas Evdik Chachamim, why did the Chachamim make a general Gzera about cheese of Goyim? So Rashi points out the question is really only according to the Rabbanah. Rav Meir, who says at least with the ones that are based on Yaki, that they're also Bahana, fine, the Gemara is going to say later on Lama Dalet, it has to do with Avodah Zarah, but we're talking about more generally, why is Goyish cheese also in the first place? And the point behind the question is, that you would think the obvious answer is they could be making it from milk from treif animals. But later on, the Gemara is going to establish that the milk of treif animals is different than the milk of kosher animals. It won't curdle into cheese.
The milk of
non-kosher species of animals, pigs, horses, donkeys, whatever, camels, it can't be made into cheese. The butter fat content in it is too low. I don't know what it is exactly, but whatever it is, it can't be made into cheese. So therefore, the question is, Mela, raw milk, I can understand you can't drink from goyim, as we're going to talk about later on in the Perek, because they might mix into it milk from a treif animal. But cheese you can only make from milk of kosher species in the first place. So why is there a problem with it? Hold on. He says, yes, the milk itself, fine, might be from a kosher source. But what are they using to curdle the cheese? What kind of enzyme are they using to make it into cheese? The common kind of rennet they used in those days, as they still do nowadays with some high-end kinds of cheese, is they use something from the lining of an animal, of a baby calf or whatever, of a calf or some other baby animal or whatever that drinks milk, and it has an enzyme in its stomach to break down that milk, and that enzyme can also be used to make cheese. The problem is, says Rabbi Yehuda, that the keva, and keva over here, by the way, doesn't mean the skin itself. Later on, we're going to talk about later, eventually in the Gemara, we're going to get to cases where they use the skin of the keva, the actual keva itself, in other words, which has the enzymes in it. Here we're talking about what they often do is they take the curdled milk that you find in that stomach when the calf is shechted or killed by the goyim or whatever, and you take that curdled milk and use it as a starter for cheese. So the problem is, therefore, that Rabbi Shmuel says they're using the keva of a nevela, and therefore, so that makes the cheese also. Now you don't say buckle because it's a dover hamamid, it's something which is essential to the finished product because without it you don't have cheese. Therefore, it's not buckle.
You don't make cheese with a non-animal.
Okay, so wait. Okay, so we have a general iser as we're seeing in our Mishnah about goyish cheese. Already, yeah, in the times of the Gemara, it was pretty much the only kind of rennet they would use that came from animals. Later on, eventually, in the times of the Goyim, I don't know, whatever, they developed various kinds of vegetable-based, various kinds of vegetarian-type rennet. And then the question became, what about those? What about those? Do they make goyish cheese also as well? The Rambam writes flat out that it doesn't make a difference. The Gzeira against goyish cheese applies even to those. And we'll see. Again, later on, I mean, Gemara, I'm on it, we're going to deal more extensively with this whole thing of goyish cheeses. There are other Rishonim who disagree with that and say that since the only problem the Gemara is talking about over here is that they use rennet from animals that are not kosher or that are used for avodah zarah or whatever, then that implies that if you're using a vegetable-based rennet or whatever, it should be allowed. Lamaisa, there were places, and Shulchan Aruch says that in general you should say it's also goyish cheese, regardless what kind of rennet it's made with. However, in a place where the local minhag is based on their poskim over there, based on their rabbanim over there, that they allow goyish cheese made with vegetable rennet, okay, so fine. They have their local minhag; they're entitled to keep it. But other than that, the halacha should be that it's also ready, that it's also regardless.
So it's not
traces. So it depends.
It's not
the Indian of traces. So it is an Indian of traces. It's traces midrabbanim. We're talking about
midrabbanim.
Well, obviously, this whole thing is midrabbanim again. Midaraisa. We have to figure out. That's what we're going to figure out. Whether the problem with these cheeses is something daraisa or zirabon. That's the thing. That's what we have to figure out. That's what we have to figure out. What the problem is, why the Chachamim said as a blanket statement that all goyish cheese is also. Even though from treif animal's milk you can't make cheese, right? Okay, so Rabbi Yeshua starts by saying, because they use the keva, they use the curdled milk from a nevela. And therefore it's considered part of the nevela, therefore it's also. Amaloi, so Rabbi Shmuel says, v'halei kevas oila chamura mekevas nevela. But what about, though, consider, don't we know that the curdled milk that you'd find in a calf that's shechted as a korban oila would be, in a way, more serious than what you find in a nevela, in the sense that not only you have both of them are an isur lav, but an oila on top of that being kodshin, you also have an isur me'ila, where b'mezid you'd get another malchus.
So
the question is like this. One time. And Omru, and yet we find that the Chachamim said, Koyin Shadaita Yofa Sarfachaya. Even though everything in an Ola is burnt on the Mizbeach, nevertheless, this curdled milk that you find in the animal's stomach, where after it's shechted and then cut up, a Koyin who Daita Yofa literally means his mind is nice, but it's kind of a euphemistic way of saying that he's not squeamish. So a Koyin who's not squeamish, Sarfachaya, he can gulp it down raw. In other words, a normal person would find it disgusting to drink this stuff, this curdled milk that you find in the stomach. But if you have a kohen who's not squeamish, he's not dehei, he's allowed to. Meaning, even though it's kosher, in other words, even though it comes from an ola, and all of an ola has to be burnt on the mizbeach, and if you use any part of it outside of that, then you're committing me'ila. Nevertheless, this curdled milk there is not considered part of it because it's only the contents of the stomach. And we see a kohen, therefore, is allowed to eat it. By the same logic, then, if you have curdled milk in the stomach of an animal that's a nevela, by the same logic, it shouldn't make the cheese from it, also. The curdled milk itself, in principle, ought to be mutter to drink by a kavachomer from the one of the ola. Why would it make the cheese, also? Veloi hoiduloi, and the Mishnah continues. Now, they didn't agree with him, with whatever Tana said this idea, that the kohenim are allowed to gulp it down. Avul omru enen in veloi moilin. However, the Chachamim did say that if you're not allowed to have hannah. That's the point, because this is not part of the oila itself. This is not this is content of the stomach of the oila. When they cut up the stomach, they find this stuff in it. Okay. Maryland. But the Chachamim did say, the Chachamim who disagreed with him still agreed it's not also Daraisa. They said you're not allowed to have Hanah from it, Darabonon. But if you did, you haven't committed Me'ilah. In other words, it's not also Daraisa, it's only also Darabonon. So therefore, so again, if there's no Me'ilah in it, in other words, then it's not considered part of the animal itself. It's called, as Rashi says, Pir Shabalmu, it's just like a waste product. And therefore, even by an Ola, you should be allowed to eat it. How much more so by an Avela? So why would using that to curdle cheese, why to curdle milk into cheese, why would that make the cheese also? Some of the Mepharshim actually understand that this Aval Omra Einan and Vole Merlin is actually part of, is not part of Rabbi Shmuel's statement. It's a separate thing. The Mishnah is interjecting. By the way, this is that Rabbi Shmuel said that that the Kohenim are allowed to drink this stuff. The other Chachamim later on disagreed with Rabbi Shmuel and said that's not a valid proof because Einan and Vole Merlin. Okay. Anyway. Amaloi, so Rabbi Shua answers him, fine, you're right. The reason is not because they use the curdled milk from an avela, but rather, Mishnah not been noted of Kavas Eglet over the Kachavim. No, rather the reason is because they use curdled milk from calves that were shechted in honor of Avodah Zarah. And there, with Avodah Zarah is more, to curdle this Avodah Zarah, rather, things that are offered to Avodah Zarah are more serious than anything else. There we say even the waste that's in its stomach or whatever, also becomes Osabana, because Rashi says, as opposed to an Avela, right? Rashi says the reason why, the Gemara discusses later when we get to this part in the Gemara explains the logic behind that is because the more stuff you have in the animal's stomach, the bigger and fatter it looks. Therefore, when you're shechting the korban in honor of an avodah zarah, when a person is shechting a korban in honor of an avodah zarah, therefore he has an interest in this peresh being called a korban as well, and therefore it becomes offered. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua argues, well, there you go then. So they take calves that they shechted for avodah zarah, then they take this curdled milk out of their stomachs and they use it as a starter for cheese. Therefore, in general, the Chacham said the cheese is offered. Amaloi, because of Avodah Zarah. However, Rabbi Shmuel says, no good. In that case, then why didn't the Chachamim say that Goyish cheese is also Bahanah? So before we had the one from Beis Inyak, which Rabbi Meir says is also Bahanah, and the Chachamim even disagreed with him on that. But certainly all the other cheeses from all other places outside of Beis Inyak, everybody agrees are only also Bahanah. If it's a matter of Avodah Zarah, why? So Rabbi Yeshua did not want to answer him with the real reason. For reasons that we will see later on in the Gemara, when we get to the Sugya on it, on Daf Lamed Hey. Instead, Instead, Rabbi Yeshua distracted Rabbi Shmuel by bringing up another point. Namely, Omaloi, he says to him, Yishmuel, Ochi, he says over here, Yishmuel, my brother, not that he wasn't his brother, obviously, but it means my friend, he was actually a Talmud, but whatever. Hey, Achatakurda, I want to ask you, the second Pasuk in Shir HaShirim goes, so how do you read the pasuk? The word daidecha, remember they didn't write anything with the kodesh in those days, it was all about that. So how do you read that word? Kitozim daidecha miyayin or kitozim daidayich? Daidecha is lashon zachar. It means that the Jewish people are speaking to Hashem and saying, you, Hashem, your love of us is better than wine. Or do you read the pasuk? He tells him, "Daich miyayin." Do you read the pasuk that half of the pasuk is Hashem speaking to the Jewish people and saying, "You feminine Jewish people, your love for me is better than wine." Which is it? Amaloi, he tells him, "Daich." So Rabbi Shmuel answers him, "I read it as daich in the feminine, that it's Hashem speaking to the Jewish people." Amaloi, Rabbi Shmuel tells him, "Ain't a okay. No, you're misunderstanding it." Because after all, you have the very next pasuk we see clearly shows it continues. The smell of your oil, where shmonecha is clearly lashon zachar, the smell, the fragrance of your oil is good, referring that the Jewish people are speaking to Hashem. Therefore, the previous pasuk also, since it's a direct continuation, therefore, kitoyim deydecha miyayin also has to be the Jewish people talking to Hashem. Deydecha in the masculine form, not deydayich in the feminine form.
So the question is?
So Rabbi Shua brought this point up to distract Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel was trying to find out the reason behind the gzera on goyish cheese. Rabbi Shua did not want to tell him, as we will learn next week in the Gemara, why he didn't. So therefore, he distracted him by bringing up, so let me ask you how you read this word in the pasuk. Various Mepharshim, well, so on the face of it, on the simple face of it, there isn't any connection. He just wanted to find some other topic to bring up in order to that he should stop asking him about the cheese. With that said, a lot of the Mepharshim talk about there is actually a connection, after all, in the sense that when we say ketosim dadecha miyayin, or ketosim dadayach, as the case may be, part of it, we'll learn later on in the Gemara, again, on Lamed Hey, that part of the meaning of this pasuk is that the gzeres of the Chachamim are in a way more important than the dinim of Daraita. Chaviv mala divrei sofim, yosim divrei Torah, as the expression goes, that Hashem says, the words of the Chachamim are more precious to me than the words of the Torah itself. And this pasuk has to do with that, so therefore Rabbi Yeshua thought it as an opportune thing to bring up to tell Rabbi Shmuel, look, Rabbi Shmuel, even if you don't understand the reason behind this takana, nevertheless, divrei chachamim are something very important. Eventually, you'll understand the reason, but for meanwhile, just accept it as given. And Marshal,
yeah, and Rabbi Shmuel, the mean Rabbi Shmuel ben Kochel.
It means Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Shmuel ben Hanania. The Rabbi Shimon Hananya, where one of the five Talmudim of Rabbi Yechon Zakkai is. Okay, so...
It seems to me he didn't have an answer.
Well, he had an answer, but for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss later on Laman Hey, he didn't want to tell him. But eventually, we'll find out. Eventually, we'll learn the Gemara, and we'll find out what the real reason is. There's others. Marshall points out also the word Dajecha, besides being related to the word for love, it can also be related to the word Dad, which means a breast, an udder, whatever. So therefore, it has very much to do, therefore, with a Xeron cheese, which comes from milk, from the udders of an animal. So therefore, that was also like a sort of to say, the Ketuvim Dajecha, the Xeron that the Chachamim made regarding the Dad, regarding milk that comes from the udder of an animal, is extremely important. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Yayin Minolon, where do we get that wine of Goyim should be also Banal? Well, first we're going to talk about how we know that, again, remember there's two different kinds. There's Yayin Netzach and there's Sam Yayin. So first we're going to deal with how we know that Yayin Netzach is also Banal. So first we're going to deal with that. Which actually, Tosfos points out then, the question is then, in that case, fine, but our Mishnah is talking about Stam Yenim on the face of it when it says it's also Bahana. So that's what we discussed yesterday, that Tosfos understands that what it is the Gemara is asking for the basis, how we know that Yayin Netzach is also Daraisa, and then in turn, how we know Yayin Netzach is also Daraisa. In turn, the Chachamim made the Uxera to be parallel to the Din Daraisa. So if Yayin Netzach is also Bahana, then Stam Yenim should also be. So therefore, the Gemara is asking about the basis where we know that Yayin Netzach is also Bana, and once we know that, we'll understand that the same thing has to apply to the Gzeder Zirabon, because the Gzeder Zirabon are usually made to be parallel to the corresponding Din Daraisa.
We make a distinction, and we ask on it, between Ozi Kochalim and, Yayin Netzach.
Right, so that's the thing. So the Gemara is asking Yayin Minolon, where do you know that wine that was poured out as a libation to Avodah Zarah is also Bana? And once we know that, then automatically we'll know that in that case the same thing applies to Stam Yenim. Which again, we talked yesterday that the Ran understands it differently. That the point is once you have that Yayin Netzach is also Bana, the Chachamim were concerned that you might confuse one for the other, or that if people see that you're allowed to have Anah from Stam Yenim, they're going to mistakenly think you can have Anah from Yayin Netzach also, which we talked about yesterday, what the Bach says, that in that case, Nachmina would be in a time like ours, where the Goyim don't pour wine in honor of their Avodah Zarah. Is it also Bahana or not? Anyway, okay, getting back to the Gemara, Yayin Minolon, Omer Rav Baravua, Omer Kro, because you have like this, the Pasuk says in Hazinu, Asher Chelov Zvachema Yechelu, look at these Getchkes, they eat the fat of their Korbanos, Yishu Yein Nesichon, they drink the wine that's poured to them, in the sense that, and therefore the Pasuk continues like, and you think these Getchkes can help you? Try and see if they're actually going to help you. Yeah, you bring them all these Korbanos and all these libations and whatever, but they don't do anything for the goy. So, we have...
Even if they did, we would still be up.
Obviously, but the point is, in that part of the Shira, in that part of Hazinu, we're saying that Hashem will judge the nations and for what they did to the Jewish people, and also for the fact that, look at this, all this time they were worshipping their Geshkes, which can't even help them, so now let everybody realize that Hashem is boss, which they should have been realizing all along.
Right.
Okay. So the point is, we have a Hekesh between the Zebach and the Yayin. Ma Zebach also...
Didn't we know that
without us? We knew that, but Goyim have to eventually learn that as well. Ma zebach also b'hano, af yayin nami also b'hano. So therefore, just as something that's brought as a korban to a getchke is also b'hano, a food or whatever, so also wine or any other liquid that's poured, so also wine that's poured to a tabar desara is also b'hano. Fine. Zebach gufei minolon. Okay, well then we have to ask, how do we know the korban itself is also b'hano? The answer is Dichtiv, because you have a pasuk in Tilim, by Yisomgil of Al-Pa'ur, by Yechlu Zivchei Meisim. It says about the Jewish people when they were in Shittim, before they crossed the Yarden at the end of Parashat Balak, that they were connected to Baal Pa'ur, they attached themselves to Baal Pa'ur, and they ate the korbanos to the dead idols, in other words, from which we learn, therefore, Mam Meth Osabana, Zevach Nami Osabana. So just like a meth, a dead body is Osabana, so is a korban to a geshke. Okay, well, meth Gufa Minola, and how do we know a meth itself is Osabana? The answer is ask your Shom Shom Me'egla Rufa, because we learned by Exeter Shava, from the word Shom, that you have in connection with a meth, and that you have in connection with Egla Rufa. Thomas Shom Miriam, by the case of one, but when Miriam died, it says Miriam died there. It says by the Egla Rufa, it says they should decapitate the Egla there in the valley. Therefore, Malahalan Osabana, Kandami Osabana. So therefore, it means just like the Egla Rufa is Osabana, as we will see in a second how we know that. So a mess also, a body of a mess is also Osabana. And as we learned at Sanhedrin also, the Tachrichim of it are Osabana. And the Hosimanol, and how do we know the Egla Rufa itself is also Bana? Amizre Rav Yana, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yana, Kapora Ksivva Kakodshin, because the Pasuk says that the Pasuk says that the Egla Rufa is brought to Kapora, Kapir La'am for Yisrael, so therefore just as Kodshim are also Bana, except for the parts that are specifically given to the Kohenim and to the owner, etc., so also the Egla Rufa. So
even though it's not
an actual Korban, but nevertheless, yeah. But that's because of that, since it says Kapora by it. Actually, Tosa
very sharp.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Shabbat, sort of like a Mama Sinu more. Tosus points out you have both. You have also the fact that it says Shum, besides that we use it for the Xeter Shabbat with the net, we also learn Shum to hate Kvodasa, it has to be buried right there, meaning it's also Bahana, you can't do anything with it except bury it. But then Tosus talks about why we need both Lemudim. Anyway, the point is, putting it all together, therefore what we have is like this. The Eglad Rufa is also Bahana, once it's decapitated, therefore so is a net, by the Xeter Shabbat, Shum. In turn, therefore, korbanos to geshkes are compared to a mess, by yechul zivchei meisim, therefore those korbanos are also osabana, and wine is compared to a korban in the pasuk chelav v'chemer and yein nesicham. So that's how we find that yein nesach, that wine that was poured out as a libation to Avodah Zarah, is osabana.
It's such a stretch to think that such a basic issue of yein nesach is not really like a clear pasuk. It's like a pasuk connected to a pasuk connected to a pasuk, or
now. It's not the only thing. You have halachas that are learned from a single letter in the Torah, you know. You have, for example, B'dikas Chometz, the Gemara mentions in Sochem, how we know B'dikas Chometz has to be done with a candle, because we learn Metziah Mimetziah, Metziah Mechipos, the Chipos Miner. We also have something similar like that in Eruvin also, where we have a whole chain of Sukkim to establish some basic din in the Hilchos Eruvin. I think about Shom Shabbos or something, I don't remember.
Well,
we have such things. Yeah, such things sometimes. And by the way, so the Rambam in fact says in Sefer HaMitzvot, he says that actually exactly what the Gemara is saying over here. We're usually familiar with, because there's the usual enumerations of the mitzvot that we find in various Sfarim, such as Sefer HaChinuch, and whatever. Usually the last one of them is the mitzvah in Parshas Vayelech to write a Sefer Torah. The Rambam actually enumerates this one as a 613th mitzvah, because he enumerates this pasuk, Ashachelas v'chayme yechelu yushtu yein nesicham, as the issur to drink yayin nesach. Even though it's not formulated in the pasuk explicitly as an issur, as the Gemara is saying over here, that's where we learn that it's also that's also to drink and to have an asam. Okay. Then we said that vinegar of goyim that was originally wine, in other words, while they still had it in their possession, it turned into vinegar in their possession. So therefore, again, you have the concern that maybe while they had it, they used it for nisuch. So the question is pshita. Well, obviously, it should still be also. Mishum da achmitz pakalei isur. What do you think? Because it became vinegar, therefore the isur should go away. If it became also before, of course it's going to stay also afterwards. You're not going to use the vinegar to serve geshkes. That's fine. That's why we're saying if a goy buys vinegar from a Jew, it's not also bahana. But obviously, if it was also bahana when it was wine, then it stays also bahana after it turned vinegar. Why would we think otherwise?
Yeah.
The answer is Omer Rav Ashi ha also lashminen. You're right. That's not the main chiddush of our Mishnah. The chiddush that the Mishnah is trying to tell us: choymet shalonu b'yad erik kachavim enit tarach choysam b'ser choysam. If you have vinegar of a Jew that he deposited for safekeeping with a goy, you do not need a seal inside a seal. Later on in the parak, we're going to talk about, towards the end of the parak, we're going to talk about the concept that there are certain kinds of foods and other things that if you're going to leave them for safekeeping with a goy, you need a double seal to make sure that the goy doesn't swap them out for something else. You have a,
since he doesn't use
chametz tzavah d'zara, you don't need a double seal. All you need is a single seal. Well, you still need a single seal, but because, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, once there's a seal, once there's even one seal, he's not going to bother trying to swap it out, but you don't need two seals. Two seals are only for certain things. There's four or five things that we're going to learn later on towards the end of the passage. Okay.
What if it spoils completely?
It spoils completely what? It's not Roy Lachel Keller.
I don't know.
I mean, if it becomes completely any Roy Lachel Keller, maybe not. I don't know. Now, why is that? Why do you need only one seal in the case of vinegar that you deposit by a goy? Because if you're worried about nisuch, well, they're not going to do it because they don't do nisuch with vinegar. The imishum
if they did, it would.
Right, right. The is it that you're concerned that the goy may swap it out for vinegar of his own? He may take your vinegar and swap it out with worse quality vinegar of his own. You don't need kibin deikach koysim. Once you have one seal, loy tarach amazayach. He's not going to go to the trouble of forging a seal, of breaking open the one seal and forging a new seal. So one seal is enough to take that away. Tosis, by the way, mentions, on the face of it, that should mean that if we have vinegar, again, that was made from wine, on the face of it, if a goy touches it, it should be mutter to use and to drink and have anachem. However, that's what Rabbeinu Meshulam says. However, Rabbeinu Tam says, the fact of the matter is, it's not so simple at what point it becomes vinegar. You have, there can be different things. It tastes like vinegar, but smells like wine. It smells like vinegar, but tastes like wine. You have different gradations in the middle over there where it's not so simple. So therefore, Tosfos says, so the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch therefore is that if the vinegar has gotten so strong where if you pour it on the ground, it bubbles, then for sure there's no possibility of considering it wine anymore. Then yes, we would follow what Rabbeinu Meshulam says and it wouldn't be osur if a goy touches it. But if it's any point before that, if it hasn't reached that point of acidity yet, then it would still be osur to be on the safe side. Okay. Amar Rav Ila. So now Rav Ila says like this. Shaninu. Now let's consider. We learn in a brisa another din about wine. Yain mevushal shall overkachavim shayim mishchilot the yain oser. We learn that wine of goyim that was cooked, in other words, so it was originally wine in the hands of the goyim, and then the goy cooked it. Then oser, so it has the same iser as the original wine. Again, we have to ask pita. Isn't that also obvious? Mishum de ivshal pakalei sura. Why do we think? Because it's been cooked, because it's been heated up. Therefore the iser should go away. And Omer Ravashi, Ravashi says, same answer as before. Ha also lashminen. Again, the chiddush of that braita is the same point as before. Yayin mevushal shalanu. If we have wine that we Jews cooked, the yad over to chavim, and now you're depositing it in the hands of a goy, ain't sara choysim b'sara choysim, you do not need a double seal. For the same reason, even shumin suchi laminat. See, is it because you're thinking they might use it for nisuch? They don't use yayin mevushal for nisuch. The imishum echlufi, and again, is the concern that he might swap it out, that he might drink your wine and substitute it with his own wine? Can't. Kivin ge'ika choysim echad lecharach mazayif. Again, once there's one seal, then he's not going to go to that trouble. You don't need a double seal in order to deter him from that.
How does he know it's cooked?
So we have to ask the chlal. This is a good place actually to talk about the whole issue of yayin mevushal. I mean, we're all familiar with the concept of yayin mevushal. You buy yayin mevushal from the store, and therefore you have a goyish cleaning lady or whatever, then you don't have to worry about it. But you have to ask the question: what actually makes it mevushal? And second of all, why indeed should yayin mevushal be different than regular wine? So on the face of it, the Gemara over here is saying, because goyim don't use it for nisuch. However, the Rambam, for example, understands it that way. However, the Rosh asks questions on it. I mean, again, if we said before that one of the reasons why wine of goyim is also is not just because of the problem of nisuch, but because of the problem of b'nei sehem, that we don't want to socialize with them too much and it should lead to intermarriage, why would cooked wine be any different? Why would mevushal wine be any different? What would the difference be? Well, so there has to be some kind of difference. So you have, again, you have the Rambam's point based on the Gemara over here that if it's cooked, they don't use it for nisuch. You have the Ramban gives a different answer, which is that because once you cook it, it changes the taste of the wine. Therefore, it's almost like now it's a different kind of liquid. It doesn't have the same social status as before. For anybody, it tastes different. So that's, I'll get into a second, what is the actual definition of Mevushel? Wait, but one, the definition that Ramban is using for purposes of his answer is that the cooking actually changes the taste of the wine. And you have, I think, some of the Rishonim talk about that maybe actually it means that it has to be cooked down so much that it becomes like syrupy. But anyway, the point is it changes the taste of it enough that you can't really consider it the same.
It's not a week old Mevushel today.
Hold on. Great, I'll get to that. Then the Rosh gives another answer, which is the Rosh says, fine, in principle, yes, it could be the same kind of thing. It could have the same social status, and it could. However, wine that's cooked is such a rare thing that the Chachamim didn't find the need to be gozer on it. Which obviously then, therefore, if you follow the Rosh, then you have a problem nowadays, because nowadays, wine that's cooked is not really very rare at all. It's actually...
Cooked wine hasn't got the same strength like regular wine.
Ah, the one second.
In other words, it's not... Regular wine could have later... 40% of
No. Regular wine doesn't get as high as that. Regular wine, unless it's fortified wine or whatever, the maximum for regular wine is the same whether it's Mevushel or not. 15%, 18% or so alcohol. The yeast that produce alcohol can't live in solutions of alcohol higher than that. Anyway, though, okay. So that kind of leads into the question: what exactly does it take to make wine Mevushel? You have basically three opinions among the Rishonim. Three major opinions. One is that you boiled the wine, that it came to a boiling temperature. One is that there's less of it, which actually the Shach says amounts to the same thing. Once you boil it, then there's less of it because some of it evaporates. And then you have another definition, which is apparently the one that Ramban is using, that it becomes sweeter because it changes the taste.
What is it?
So that's, you have the different opinions, and you have, and of course, that leads to nowadays you have different opinions among the more contemporary postgame of what exactly what. For example, nowadays they usually pasteurize most wine. Is that enough to make it Mevushel? Rav Moshe Feinstein says yes. All you need is for it to reach Yad Tzila, he says. At that point, it's less than 200. Actually, pasteurization is usually 160, 180 or so degrees. Rav Moshe says that's enough.
Well, he says
since you have Rishonim who say that it's enough for it to have reached a cooking temperature, and we know in Hilchos Shabbos, for example, Yad Tzila Desboy. I mean, in Hilchos Shabbos, the truth is, the definition of Yad Tzila Desboy. I mean, we know in principle what it's supposed to be, that your hand would recoil if you tried touching it. The Gemara obviously doesn't put it in terms of degrees because those didn't exist in those days. You have in connection with Hilchos Shabbos to be on the safe side, you say it's about 110, 113 or so degrees, which is the minimum it could possibly be. When it comes to the question of Stam Yain, I'm fine. You have to use a higher temperature to be sure that it's considered.
Who's the main postgame of the Rishonim who goes by that beer?
So I don't remember which of the postgame says. I don't remember which of the Rishonim says which among those opinions. The Shach again says that the first two ones that it reached a cooking temperature. And that some of it is, and that the volume of it is reduced. The Shach says are actually one and the same thing. When it reaches that temperature, then the volume of it will be reduced a little bit.
Unless you cook for a while.
No, not necessarily. But again, if you cook it in a sealed vessel, that's different.
Yeah.
Okay, so one second. So anyway, the Moshe holds that once wine is pasteurized, that's it. It's Mevushel. A number of other more contemporary posts can disagree with that. For example, Rav Shlomo Zalman argued that, the fact of the matter is they do them in sealed retorts or whatever. None of the volume is missing. None of the taste changes because they have to make sure when they pasteurize to not ruin the taste of the wine. How can you consider that Mevushel? So therefore, he holds that, no, pasteurization would not be enough to make it Mevushel.
Who's that?
This is Rav Shlomo Zalman. Oh, your boss holds that. So you see the belt tends to follow the Moshe, and as you see, all the bottles of wine that you buy in the store that are labeled Mevushel, they're Mevushel according to Moshe's opinion. I think there you have another opinion, I think from the Selma Rav, who says it's a similar idea, but he says the temperature has to be a bit higher, 190 degrees, still okay.
Before the usual way.
How would they cook wine in the time of the Gemara? They pour the wine into a pot and then turn up the and then light a fire under it. So if you do that, fine. You know, it'll fit. one or the other of the criteria of the Rishonim, then it will be considered Mevushal. And again, Yad Rosh's point that to do such a thing in those days was rare. Again, pasteurization nowadays is common, and they have to do it so as not to reduce any of the volume or any of the taste. So therefore, the Shlemazam and Taka have a problem with that. Ramosha says,
you
nevertheless, it's still a
good.
Milk is a different thing. It has nothing to do.
Okay.
Yeah, milk is pasteurized. It has nothing to do. Kalavakum is also regardless of the temperature. Nice.
According to the, it must have been very rare, because if it has to fill both reasons, meaning the reason of not using it for a good jar, right? That's the right.
No, because according to the Rambam, all you need once you, the Rambam's definition of it is as long as something has been done to the wine that makes it that now you couldn't use it for libation in our base and mixer, then what have you, the goyim will not use it for their nisuch either.
Understand.
So therefore,
the
only
take care of the second reason, the not mixing together.
So the Rambam is not concerned about that. Again, maybe he holds more like Tosfos that the Chachamim made their zera to be parallel to the din d'oraisa. Given that yain nesach would only apply before it was boiled, then therefore they weren't so they didn't see fit to extend their zera after it was boiled either.
I mean, for not the intermarriage, you said that was...
Right, but the Rambam would hold. Okay, yeah, of course you have the problem of intermarriage, but the Chachamim drew their rule narrowly. As long as it's not suitable for Nisuch, then we're not worried about the... Yeah. Okay, turn it up on him. We learn in a Braisa. Yayin mevushal va'aluntis shal ozik achavim asurim, cooked wine, or aluntis, which we'll define in a couple of lines what aluntis is, of goyim are offer. Because again, they contain wine, and they were processed by the goy. Aluntis kavriyasa muteres. On the other hand, aluntis kivriyas, actually aluntis as it is according to its original state is muter. I mean, so Rashi explains that means, in other words, that the goy bought the aluntis ready made from a yid, so then it's like yayin mevushal that he bought from a yid. Same idea. In other words, it's not suitable for, like, we're going to describe in a second what aluntis is. It's wine with various other ingredients mixed in. We'll see in a second. But the point is, so Rashi understands if the goy takes his own wine and makes the aluntis mixture out of it, then it would be awesome. Same way as if he takes his own wine and boils it. But if he takes aluntis ready made and buys it from a yid, then that would be mutter bahana, because then again it can't be used for nisuch.
By
anybody. They can't be used lahavdil on Ormiz
Be'achid. Yeah, we cannot.
Right. Tosfos has some difficulties with Rashi's explanation, and Tosfos instead explains that aluntis, again, we're going to see soon what the ingredients are, but very commonly what they would do is they would mix together the other ingredients and store them away, and then only add the wine later. So therefore, what you have is, if you have a goy is taking aluntis out of the barrel, so then you have a problem. He himself may have put in the wine of his own. On the other hand, if you see that he is pouring out from a barrel, he's pouring out the other ingredients that go into the aluntis, then that's okay. You can use those, and you can drink those ingredients or buy them from him to mix into your own aluntis or whatever, because no wine has gone into it yet. Okay. Ezeri aluntis. Now, what is aluntis? It's kedetanam, because Tanya actually it's a braisa. Gabish Shabbos, as we learn in connection with Hilchos Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're allowed to make a neumlin, but you're not allowed to make aluntis. The ezeri a neumlin, the ezeri aluntis. What is what? What are these two recipes? A neumlin is yayin udvash or pilpulin. A neumlin is you have wine and mix into it honey and pepper. So that you're allowed to make on Shabbos because it's a nice drink. It's a nice spicy drink to drink on Shabbos.
Yayin and pepper?
Wine, pepper, not pepper like bell peppers or hot peppers or whatever that we buy in the store. Pepper and pepper. Black pepper, yes. So wine, honey, and black pepper. Aluntis is yayin yoshan amayin fluin vafarsman. Aluntis is a mixture of old wine, clear water, and balsam. And what do they use it? Da'avi lavei masutta. They use it as a concoction that you drink after you come out of the bathtub. Now, the point is, why are you not allowed to make that on Shabbos? Not because you're not allowed to bathe on Shabbos, even though that's true. The reason is because it's a medicinal drink. People wouldn't normally drink it. And we talked the other day, at the end of the previous parak, at the end of the previous sugya, it almost seems like a different parak, but it's not, that you're not allowed, in general, you're not allowed to drink medicinal drinks on Shabbos. Again, it's a matter of the Pekuach Nefesh or whatever.
It's nothing to do with
So therefore, so you're not allowed to drink aluntis, you're not allowed to mix aluntis on Shabbos, because you can't drink it on Shabbos, but therefore, so that's the point. When we said before that you can't buy aluntis from it, they can't drink a goy's aluntis, but if he buys it ready-made, or like Tosfos says, if he has just the raw ingredients, then you're allowed. Now we know what aluntis is. It's a mixture that contains wine and then also and also other ingredients, water and water, clear water and balsam. That's aluntis. Onward, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef to Amitabayu. Next, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef say that Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both say Yayin Mozug Ein B'Mishum. So now we're gonna be the next piece of Gemara. We're gonna be talking about two somewhat related dinim. You have besides the dinim of Yayin Nesach and Stam Yainim that we're dealing with, we're also gonna deal with another din that applies to wine, namely the whole concept of Gilui. You have an issue that's brought throughout Shas in many different places. The problem that if you leave liquids uncovered, a snake may come and drink from it, and meanwhile inject venom into it, and then you drink that liquid, or you eat that moist food or whatever. Hello, then you imbibe the poison, you drink in the poison, and then can kill a person. So therefore, you have the concept of guilt. So now we're going to discuss about these various types of wine mixtures and cooked wine or whatever, how they relate to the dinim of Yayin Nesach and Stam Yainim, how they relate to the dinim of Gilui. By the way, I mean, before we get too far into it, it's worth mentioning, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that nowadays most people live in places where snakes are not very common. Therefore, in general, the dinim of Gilui in principle don't apply. In principle, you're allowed to drink wine or water or what have you that's been left uncovered. We're not afraid that a snake has drunk. So the Shalach Kaddish says that nevertheless, Baal Nefesh should be careful about it. And the Zilma is also brought in the name of the Zilma Goyim to be careful about it. He said, B'chlal, when the Chachamim make a Gzera on something, we, aside from the reasons that are given in the Gemara, there may well be other reasons, other deeper reasons, like Kabbalah or whatever, that we don't know about, and therefore the Gzera should still be a Gzera. We talk about a similar thing when it comes to Chol Yisrael, which we're going to talk about later on in the parak. You know, we all know the famous heter of Rav Moshe to drink milk that's under USDA inspection or whatever. But we say not again for the same reason, because once the Chachamim made a gzera, they had more reasons for their gzera than that. So the same thing applies to uncovered liquids. In principle, afi halacha is allowed, but given these points, then it is better to be careful. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are both saying, Yayin mozug ein b'mishum gilui, wine that's diluted with water, there's no problem of gilui, there's no problem of leaving it uncovered because snakes won't drink from it. Yayin mevushal ein b'mishum nisuch. And also, another din, cooked wine, as we said, there's no problem of nisuch, and therefore, if a goy touches it, you're allowed to drink it. So, and now we have a question. What about, you're telling me two different dinim, one about diluted wine and gilui, one about cooked wine and yayin nesach. What about, is cooked wine, is there a problem of gilui or not? Would a snake drink from it? Toshma, well, okay, we have a braisa that Rav Yaakov Bar Idi gave edus about yayin mevushal that there's no problem of gilui. There you go, there's no problem of gilui. And another example.
What would a snake?
A snake would feel.
Is there a difference between mevushal and not
mevushal? A snake has a good sense of smell. It would detect that this wine smells different.
So that shows this right. It goes according to smell.
So it goes according to, yeah, apparently. I mean, again.
Not just temperature.
Again, well, that's what I said before, that the Shach says that the two things go together. Once it reaches a certain temperature, then inevitably some of it evaporates. Again, some small amount of it evaporates, I don't know, but again, you know, with modern pasteurization, not necessarily. That's the reason why Rav Shlomo disagrees with Rav Moshe Rav Moshe on this, but the old style, visual, yeah, apparently a snake would notice there's some kind of difference in it. Yeah. Okay. And also, of course, according to the other definition, that yayin mevushal tastes sweeter, then again, a snake would detect that there's some difference in it. Okay. All right. Similarly, Rabbi Yana Rabbi Shmuel Cholash. One time, Rabbi Yana Rabbi Shmuel wasn't feeling well. All the Gabei Rabbi Shmuel ben Zirud v'Rabbanon l'Shayuladei. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Zirud and the other Rabbanon came to be Mavaka Chayla, and then see how he's doing. Yachsu v'Kamen Baylu. As they're sitting over there by his bed, they're sitting and wondering the following question. Same as before. Yain Mavushal Yesh v'Mishum Gilui. Hayain v'Mishum Gilui. What's the din as far as Yain Mavushal and snake? Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Zirud. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Zirud tells them, "Hachi Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Mishum Gabra Rabba." This is what Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish, said in the name of a great person. And the Gemara interjects, "Who is the great person?" Umanu Rabbi Chia. That, namely, that is Rabbi Chia. Chanina says on the side of it here. So Rish Lakish said it, you should know. In other words, this, that Rish Lakish is saying, it's not just his own din that he came up with. You should know, he said it in the name of Rav Chiya or Rav Chanina, who is a known great authority from a previous generation.
He was an Amora?
Yeah, they're both Amora, I mean. He said, Yayin Mavushal, Ein Mimishum Gilud. That's it. Yayin Mavushal, there's no problem with Gilud. Omrule, so they say to Rav Shmuel ben Zirud, Nismos, can we rely on that statement? Can we necessarily take it to the bank and say that there won't be a problem? Machvi lehurabiana is Barishmol alive al savori. So Rabiana Barishmol, the patient who was lying there in bed, shows and makes a motion to them. Yes, it's on me and on my neck. In other words, yes, I take full responsibility that what he's saying is correct, and it's on my neck, it's on my shoulders, and yes, you can take it to the bank. In Rabishum Gilu, yeah. All right, more about Yain Mushul. Shmuel and Avlet have a Yahtzee. Shmuel and Avlet one time were sitting together.
So that's
Aloha, yeah. Shmuel and going back for a moment to Yain Nesach. Shmuel and Avlet have a Yahtzee. Shmuel and Avlet one time were sitting together. Avlet was a Goyish scholar of that time. He and Shmuel were friendly. And we find them. There's a couple of conversations that we find between them in different places and tracks. Besides over here, you also find in Shabbos. Yeah, there's an astrologer. Yeah, you have a famous story in the Sefer of Shabbos where they're watching one time, a bunch of people are going out to the meadow to cut reeds, and the Avlet says, I see with my astrology that this particular person is going to be bitten by a snake and die, and Shmuel tells him, if he's a yid, not necessarily, because he made you darker or whatever. To make a long story short, when the guy came back, they found that there, in his pack of reeds, there was a snake that he had chopped in half. And it turned out he had done tzedakah, he had done gemilas chasad in that day when everybody was when they were having lunch. One guy didn't have any food, and he pretended like to be taken from him and putting into the common pot, and then gave him whatever, and therefore tzedakah taught something of us, it saved him. So that's an example. So you have a couple of places in Shas where Shmuel and Avlet are together. What?
Only in Mavis?
Well, from Mavis is one of the most powerful things in the world. So yeah, it saves from Aniyah Sulta. Yeah, that I'm a mice and he'll tzedakah. You never heard of anybody who became poor from giving tzedakah. All right, anyway, so Shmuel and Avlet were sitting together. I saw the Kamayu Hamru Muvashla. They brought before them wine that had been cooked. Mashchel Yodei. So Avlet withdrew his hands. I want to make sure not to touch it. I want to offer it for you, Shmuel, to drink. He knew the dinim, apparently. Amalei Shmuel. So Shmuel said, you don't know all the dinim. Harayomu, Yain Mavushal, En Mavushim Yain Nesach. Don't worry, Yain Mavushal, there's no problem with Yain Nesach. You can touch it as much as you want. It won't make it also for me to drink. And, of course, that's Allah.
That confirms what we said before. So why did we need that?
So it's because Maiserav, because not only we have a theoretical din, Yain Mavushal, there's no problem with Nisil, now we have a Maiserav. Now we have an actual practical story to that effect. So far, so good. Yain Mavushal, there's no problem with Nisil, and there's also no problem with Gilead.
Depending on how you find
it, yeah. What?
There's nothing to appease, but go ahead.
He's telling him what it actually is. Yeah, you don't have to worry. You don't understand. By the way, I mean, I should mention, I mean, we're going to have a whole sugya over here about this whole issue of gilui and what snakes will and won't drink. I should mention there's an interesting...
Why not other animals?
Because other animals don't have venom. If a cat or whatever drinks from it, what
disease?
They have diseases, fine, maybe, but it's okay, you know, but there's a snake, there's actual venom, it can kill a person. There's an interesting sicha one year, Sicha Beit HaSheva in your Gimel, that ever talked about the deeper idea behind this whole thing of uncovered liquid and snakes swimming from them. The context was that ever was talking about in Sukkah, it talked about if the water from Nisach HaMayim was left uncovered, then you can't use it for Nisach HaMayim, you have to get other water from the Kier. So the deeper idea behind it that ever talked about is that so we know that water in general represents Kabbalah's oil, wine represents the looning Torah with a tam fit, water represents that you don't have a tam, but you do it anyway for Kabbalah's oil. The point is, even with that, even you have that Kabbalah's oil, nevertheless, if it's left uncovered, meaning you have gilui, all you have is nigla, and you don't have chasidus, you can still have those snakes, the nachash akadmoni, can come and inject venom into it, and then make it that it won't be quite what it should be, and that some part of it is missing, therefore. So what you need is you need to cover it in the sense that you need pini at the Torah as well to go with it. So that was what Eber was talking about in connection with water, but I guess the same principle applies, maybe even more so, to wine. That you're learning the wine, you're learning the geschmack of parts of Torah, make sure they're not left uncovered without a covering of chassid. Otherwise you're at risk of snakes. Okay. Onward. Yes. Yeah. Yannis Sotero. What?
Rashi,
Yannis
Sotero.
Yeah, Rashi in particular, yeah.
What?
Rashi in particular, it says that Rashi in particular is the wine of Torah, the schmack of part of Torah, yeah. Okay. All right. Shamay de Rav Abba Bar Abba Igli Lechamra Mezika. The servant, the attendant of Rav Abba Bar Abba, one time he had some wine that had been mixed with water. Now we're going back to the water, to the wine mixed with water part, which we said before that there's no problem of gilui with it. So one time he accidentally left some such wine, some diluted wine, uncovered. And he was worried, am I allowed to drink it now? What about the snake situation? Amalei, so Rav Abba Bar Abba told him, no problem. Hare Amru Yain Mosev Ein Mevishem Gilui. We said already that diluted wine, there's no problem of gilui, so you can drink it. However, Amar Papa, but Papa says it depends, actually. Loy Amar and Elder Mazig Tura. That only applies if it's fully diluted with wine, with water, to the normal amount that it should be diluted. Avo Mazig Vloy Mazig. Yes, I did. You're right. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. Okay, let me go back a few lines. Okay. Amte de Rabchia Igluri Lo Ahu Chamra Mabashla. The maidservant of Rabchia one time accidentally left some cooked wine uncovered. After the Kamei de Rabchia, she came to Rabchia to ask him if she allowed to drink it. Amalo Hare Omu Yain Mabushal En Mabushal Gilui. She said, no problem. Yain Mabushal, there's no problem of Gilui.
It's two mice.
So we have one mice as far as Yain Netzach and another one as far as Gilui. So that establishes it. Okay, Shamed Rav Abba Bar Abba Igli Lechamra Mziga. Rav Abba Bar Abba's servant one time left some diluted wine uncovered. Omer Le, Rav Abba Bar Abba told him, don't worry about it. Harei Omer Yain Mozer Ein Mishum Gili. We said that diluted wine, there's no problem of Gili. However, Omer a Papa said it's not so simple. Lo Yamor and Elder Mozig Tuva. That only applies if it's properly diluted with water. Have a Mozig Vle Mozig, but if it's only partially diluted, there's not a lot of water in it. Shossi, then a snake may well drink. So therefore, you would have to still be careful. By the way, as far as this, we're going to do. Well, again, as a matter of strict halacha, we don't. But again, a person can be careful about such things.
How much mother?
The normal amount in those days, the different gemaras talk about was either two parts water to one of wine or three parts water to one of wine. That was the normal ratio. As far as Yain Netzach is brought in Shulchan Aruch, Tosfos talks about it someplace in the Sugya over here, that Stam Yenim of Goyim also, if it's diluted, I think that's six parts of water to one of wine, then it's not also B'hana anymore. I don't think they say it's also to drink in that case, but I think they say in that case it's not also B'hana. So the question is, Mozig Vlay Mozig Mishasi, are you telling me that if wine is only incompletely diluted, that a snake could still drink from it? But we have the example of Rava Bar Abuna was one time traveling on a boat. He had some wine with him. He saw a snake breaking through the water and coming. It was a sea snake, I guess. Chivya means a snake. So it was coming through the water at him. So Rava Bar Abuna says to his servant, May Enig again, put out this creature's eye, meaning not literally put him out, but in other words, do something, show the snake something that'll make that he won't be attracted to my wine. Shoko Kolimaya, so the servant took a little bit of water, much less than the normal amount for dilution. Shodabe, he poured it into the wine. Vesola Hore, and the snake turned around. So you see that any amount of wine and water is enough to dissuade a snake from trying to drink from it. Why are we saying that if it's incompletely diluted, then a snake could still drink? The answer is achaya moser nafshe amezigal and moser nafshe. The difference is like this: the snake is when the wine is not diluted at all, then the snake is willing to take chances. Moser nefesh, you see over here, mesidas nefesh can apply not just to Jews. We can talk about mesidas nefesh in terms of snakes trying to inject venom. So for pure wine, he'll go take chances. So even if you have people around, the snake will still try to get a crack at this wine and then take a drink from it. I'm a ziggle and moser nafshe. Once there's some amount of water in it, he's not going to be moser nafshe. He's not going to take risks. If it's left unattended, sure, the snake will go ahead and drink from it, unless there's too much water in it that it doesn't interest him at all, the proper dilution ratio.
Well, he smells it.
But he smells the smell. Right. Well, yeah. So you have three different scenarios. You have where the wine is not mixed at all. Then not only will a snake want to drink from it, but it'll even be willing to risk its life to do it. So even if there are people around, that the snake in its little snake brain knows could kill it. You have where it's incompletely mixed, and the snake will try it if there's nobody around, so that says if he's not endangering himself. If it involves, if there are people around, like here, Dava Barakona, and if we're around, then he won't try it. And if it's completely diluted, then the snake won't even try in the first place because it's not the practice. Yeah, snakes have an excellent sense of smell. Matter of fact, I actually saw an interesting point that somebody made about this, that the Gemara elsewhere talks about. We know that Hashem cursed the snake, that it's going to eat us. And the Gemara says there's one explanation of it. It means whatever a snake eats tastes to it like dust. The one interesting explanation I saw based on this Gemara is apparently what it is the snake has a very sharp sense of smell. It smells this wine or whatever it is. It really wants it. And then it ends up taking a taste of it, and it just tastes like dust, just like everything else it eats. That's the curse of the snake. Okay, so the question is on the Ziegel and Musa Napshe. So you're telling me if the wine is completely diluted, if the wine is partially diluted, rather, you're telling me the snake is going to want to try to drink it, but it's not going to take risks to do it if there are people around. But Rabbi Yannai have a Be'ach Buri, but we know that Rabbi Yannai one time was in Be'ach Buri, the name of a city in Galil, south of Tzfat. The Amilah Bahedya have a Be'ach Buri. Others say it was Bahedya who was in the Be'ach Buri place. Have a Yasmi, people were sitting over there. Have a Koshasur Chamra Maziga. They were drinking diluted wine. Poshlahu Chamra Bekuva. There was some wine left over in the barrel. The Tsarunhi Prunka. So what they did is they covered, they tied on a piece of cloth over the top of the barrel. And then V'chazilahu Chivya D'shokil Mayav Roma Bekuva. Then they saw a snake come along and take some water, I guess it's in its mouth, and spit it out into the barrel, add the mullah bekuva until the barrel was completely filled up, wow. until the wine and water mixture overflowed the cloth cover, the solit chamer ilavet krunka, so that the wine overflowed the cloth cover, the shokim, and the snake drank from it. So you see that a snake will drink wine that was mixed with water.
Yeah.
What? So here we have the water, the wine was mixed with water to begin with, and now the snake added even more water to it, so now it's even more diluted than usual, and yet it drank from it, and yet it was doing that all in order to be able to get a drink of the good wine.
So
that contradicts what we just said. The answer is Amri, they say the difference is, the mazig ihu shasti, the mazig yachini lo shasti. The difference is, if the snake himself makes the mixture, then sure, he'll drink it. But if somebody else mixed it, then he's not going to. The snake, in other words, again, has a strong sense of smell. It'll detect whether the smell of people around, I guess, or whatever, who already mixed it. Then he's not interested because then it's too risky or whatever. But if he himself mixed it, if he himself poured in the water, the snake, then sure, it still has a good wine taste, and he'll go for it. Okay. However, Omer of Ashi became out of Masharshia. Sort of Ashi, or some say that Masharshia says, very nice, you have a very nice terrace, but for something that involves danger, you're going to try to bring a terrace. And what if the terrace is wrong? They tell, for example, the famous thing they tell about Rabbi Yosha Ber Brisker, the Beis Halevi, that you know the famous idea that you can be Yosef Shalosh Shugas with a Dvar Torah. So they asked him once why he doesn't do that, why he's not good to adapt to each other's shirtis. He said, what if I say a verse of Torah for and later on they slug it up, then it comes out. I haven't eaten the shalosh shirtis. So the same thing. A teretz is very nice, but when it comes to questions of health, you can't rely on teretzim. Lahavdil, there's an expression I came across from Mark Twain that says be careful about reading health books, you could die of misprint. Anyway. Right, exactly. Maybe the snake doesn't know the terrace. So therefore, you can't rely on such things. So therefore, the bottom line is, given that we see an actual example where a snake drank diluted wine, then you have to be concerned even if it's diluted. Therefore, Omer Rava, so Rava says, the bottom line halacha is as follows, Hilchasa, Yayin mazig yeshve mishum gilir yeshve mishum yayin nesach. Diluted wine, there is an issue of gilir and there is an issue of yayin nesach with it. So therefore, both things, because a snake will drink from it, as we saw before, and a goy might use it for nesach. Yayin mevushal, ein ve mishum gilir ve ein ve mishum yayin nesach. On the other hand, cooked wine, there's no problem of gilir and there's no problem of yayin nesach.
So
That's what we have today.
That's what we have today. Okay. More on this topic. And more on this topic. Shamei de Rebchilkiya Bar Tuvi, Iglia Haukista de Maya, the servant of Rebchilkiya Bar Tuvi left a container of water open. Rashi says kista. Rashi says is the name of a measure that they use for wine in those places, like a cup or a tank or whatever. Anyway, he left it uncovered. Vahavanoyim gabah. He was sleeping next to the uncovered container. So the question is, will a snake try to drink from that water? Also, like Abed of Chilki Batovi, so he came to ask of Chilki Batovi, is the water allowed to be drunk? Omalei and of Chilki Batovi answered him, Hare Omer Emas Yoshin Alehem. No, because the Chachamim said that the snakes are afraid, even if somebody was sleeping, a snake won't approach that water.
When it's next to you, it's okay, it's open.
So if the tank or whatever was next to you, then it's fine. However, the Gemara says, V'hani mili bi mama. Now that only applies if it's during the daytime. Ava b'leil yoloi, but at night, not necessarily. It wouldn't apply. The snake might still go for it. And the Gemara says, v'loi hi. Actually, it's not so. Whether by day or whether by night, we do not say this concept that snakes are afraid of sleeping people. The water is awful. Okay, more on this. Rav lo shosimi be'arma. Now, when it came to drinking wine, when it came to drinking water, rather, Rav was machmer on himself. He would not drink water from the house of a goat. Oh, even the water itself, what should be the problem as far as kashrus? It wasn't a problem of kashrus, it's a problem of danger. Omar, he figured to himself, Goyim are not necessarily careful about these things of gilui. They may leave their water uncovered and a snake will have drunk from it. I don't want to take the chance.
So the names are the difference between day and night.
The difference, in principle, the Gemara thought there should be a difference between day and night. No, so the halacha is in the end that no, whether it's by day or whether by night, if you're awake there and you can make sure that there's no snakes coming, fine, but if you're asleep, no good. So that's the thing. So Rav is saying, therefore, Rav would not drink water that came from the house of a goy, because it may have been left uncovered. On the other hand, water that came from a Jewish almana's house, that he would drink. Even though an almana, a woman b'chlal, is usually not expert in halacha, so therefore maybe she doesn't know particularly. But he would say, Omar, he figures, Sircha de Gavra in the kitchen. Yes, but she's an almana. She used to be married. When she was married, her husband would teach her what to do as far as the covering. Therefore, we can assume she still keeps up that habit, and therefore it's probably kept covered, and therefore it's safe to drink. On the other hand, Shmuel did the other way around. He would not drink water from the house of an almana. Omar, because he said, Lesla Insa de Gavra, because she has no husband to respect anymore. Therefore, Velimichti Amaya, so she's not necessarily careful about keeping the water covered. In other words, again, when her husband was alive, he'd remind her about it. But like this, now that her husband's dead, she may have gotten careless. Velimichti Amaya. But Shmuel, on the other hand, the opposite of Rav, would drink water from a goy's house because he figured Nehi Dagilu, Arbam is a goy. Literally, he's an Aramean, but whatever, that was the nation of goy that lived in that area. Nehi Dagilu, Lekasi, because he said, even though it's true, they may not be too careful about keeping the water covered all the time. But they are careful about cleanliness, and therefore, so fine, they don't cover their containers to make sure that snakes don't get to them. Amenakrusa means cleanliness. In other words, Shmuel said, the goyim, fine, they don't keep their water containers covered because of they're afraid of snakes. They don't know of that concept. But they keep them covered so that dirt doesn't fall into the water. Therefore, practically speaking, the water is kept covered. Therefore, it's okay to drink from it, said Shmuel.
How did they not know about the snake? I mean, wouldn't going die from such a thing as well?
They wouldn't necessarily notice. They wouldn't necessarily say they wouldn't necessarily. People died from in those times from all kinds of things. They wouldn't necessarily have realized that it was because of venom. Mm-hmm. Later on, the Gemara is going to mention later on the days we're going to have examples of people who ate foods and drank drinks without realizing that there was venom in there and died. Yeah, they may not have realized these things yet.
What about venom from a bee? A bee could come. And you could die from it.
You can die from bee venom if you're allergic to it, sure. But a bee doesn't inject venom into what it drinks because as soon as when a bee stings, then it dies. So a bee is only going to
But the fact that it has some
it only
things coming out of her body.
A bee only excretes venom only when it stings, and it only stings when it's doing it in self-defense.
It dies
afterwards. Yeah. Ikadam, another version of what happened over here with Rav and Shmuel, is Rav L'Shoti Maim Ve'amah. Again, according to the second version, again, Rav wouldn't drink water from the house of a Goy, Avon Ve'amah L'Shoti, but he would drink wine from the house of an Amona. This part is the same as the first version. Shmuel, Loi Shoti Maya, Loi Ve'amah, Loi Ve'amah. Shmuel, according to the second version, would not drink water from either one. Not from a goy's house, because they're not... it's not a question of halacha, actually. Neither of these things is brought in halacha, because apparently it was Rav and Shmuel were machmer on themselves to be on the safe side. The basic question is the water kept covered or not? If it's kept covered, then fine. If not, then not. It's not a blanket statement that anything from a goy's, that any water or liquids or whatever from a goy's house versus an Amona's house, there may or may not be problems. It's a case-by-case thing. Anyway, according to the second version, Shmuel wouldn't drink whether it came from a goy's house or an Amona's. Rabbi Shulban Levi says there are three kinds of wine to which the issue of gilui does not apply. The Elohein chad mar mosik, sharp, bitter, and sweet. So what do each of those mean? Chad is what we call in Aramaic tila, which is a type of very strong wine. Rashi says that normal wine has a bit of a sweet taste to it. This tastes more like vinegar. So therefore, it's not actual vinegar, otherwise it's not wine anymore. But still, it's a strong enough taste that snakes won't drink from it. Tila chadricha, it's sharp tila. The matri ziki, which is so sharp that if you put it in a skin bag, like we said before, it'll cause the skin bag to burst open. I guess it's acidic or whatever, I don't know. Mar, when we say bitter wine, there's no problem with gilui, is yuranka, is a type of bad quality bitter wine. And mosik is choya. When we say sweet wine, we mean wine from grapes that were sweetened too much by the sun. If the grapes are left to get overripe, then they get too much sugar in them, and therefore, and then when you make them into wine, it tastes oversweet. Mm. So those kinds are all poor quality wines, and then snakes won't drink from them because they don't taste normal. Rav Chama Machni Lilu. Rav Chama, on the other hand, said that the three things, Chad, Mar, and Mosik, actually are talking about better qualities of wine. Chad means Hamar equivalent. Sharp wine, that we say, is no problem, really means that they mixed in peppers into it. Mar Absintin. Bitter wine means they mixed in wormwood into it. Absintin is like the word absinthe in English, which is a liquor made out of wormwood. And Mosik is made barg, and sweet wine means made barg, which actually says barg is a Persian word meaning high quality. So according to the Chama, just the opposite. These three kinds of wine that a snake won't drink from are better quality than normal wine. But still, the point is, they taste different than normal wines, and therefore snakes aren't attracted to them. And in fact, that's the Rambam says, as a general rule, again, similar to what we were saying before, as far as nisuch, that if you put some other substance into the wine, then there's no problem of yayin nesach or sam yayin anymore. Similarly, you put some other substance into wine, then there's no problem of yuri anymore. Because that's the thing, it changes the taste of it enough that snakes won't be attracted.
So if you add to yayin nesach, what?
Not yayin nesach. Once it became yayin nesach, and then once it was, we're talking about wine that was Jew. Wine that was in the possession of a Jew,
right,
that he added for example, we said before, honey, pepper, or black pepper, or balsam, or whatever. Then we said after that, if a goy touches it or whatever, it doesn't become awful.
Because
the taste has changed, and because you can't use it for nisuch on the mizbeach anymore, and therefore they're not going to use it for nisuch for their purposes.
So anytime you suspect that someone's going to come to kiddush, put some honey inside your wine?
Well, you could do that. I mean, practically speaking, again, nowadays, many wines are mavushal, at least according to the Moshe's definition, and therefore you don't have a problem with that either, because we established before, yeah, mavushal
is on.
If it's not, then I guess, yeah, you could conceivably add it.
A six that goes on to the refrigerator and takes out an open bottle of wine, a coffin, but it's open, you're not allowed to use it.
So that's the thing. So later on, in the sector, when you get it.
And if it's open, and it was drunk from it, but it had a cover. She's not allowed to,
okay,
not
so
use
it. Late,
the bottle.
Okay. The answer is later on in the Masechta. Again, here we're just talking briefly about Yayin Nesach in connection with a bunch of other things of Goyim that are also later. The last 20 or so blocks of the Masechta, we're going to deal in detail with all the dinim behind Yayin Nesach, and there we're going to deal with the dinim if a Goyim moves a barrel or whatever, moves a container of wine, how it becomes also in that way. Shichuch, we'll talk about. So wait, seeing it is a difference. And after that, after Kabbalah, if a goy sees wine, then it also becomes, then you also should drink.
Whether
the pasture is not a sealed shut, but the pasture is only if it's open.
Putting the
Because once it's been, opened, yeah. I mean, once when the bottle is sealed, I don't know. But okay.
Does the wine have to be red?
No, it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter what color it is. It doesn't matter what color it is.
The wine that you buy.
But yeah, you're right. Okay, so maybe it applies to that. So anyway, that sort of thing a goy seeing it is Afi Kabbalah. Al Pi Halacha, you just have issues if a goy touches it or handles it without.
Well, can they handle it?
So you have to. So if it's not Mavushal, then you have issues. The issue of Afi Kabbalah, I have no idea. But we see from all Gemara before. Well, no, that was a guy in Mavushal. That's different. But that's different. Right. But where the idea comes from, Afi Kabbalah, and what the idea behind it is, I have no idea. I don't know such things. But whatever it is, there is that concept of Afi Kabbalah. But Al Pi Halacha, it's just a question of if a guy sees it, not sees it. If a guy touches the wine directly, or if he causes movement in the wine. Shifshuk, we'll talk about it later. In the second. We'll see when we get to in the Nuns and the Samachs and the Ayins, we'll be dealing with all these things.
There's nothing in this studio that talks about looking and watching.
Because the Gemara is not talking about things, obviously, the Gemara is talking about things that we need to know off the Allah. All right. Everyone.